It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you spent time outside early last week, you probably noticed that the air was more or less smoky. In northern and central Illinois, the air quality reached unhealthy levels, according to the National Weather Service. The Illinois Environmental Protection Agency declared an Air Pollution Action Day for the 19th and the 20th, covering most of the state, except for a little piece of the Metro East. We asked members of our texting group about this. Gene in Champaign said, "I felt it in my eyes, breathing, and in the sky." And Christopher in Brimfield said, "I noticed the sky was very hazy, but I didn't smell any smoke. This fire danger is becoming more frequent due to the drying of the earth," he says. Gene and Christopher, thank you both. The smoke came from Canadian wildfires. And as we go to air this morning, the Canadian Wildland Fire Information System has estimated there are nearly 900 of them burning. Now, if this all feels familiar, it is. Illinois had to deal with wildfire smoke last year, as well as in 2023. And the smoke could come back later this summer and in the years ahead. So for the rest of the program today, we're going to talk about what's bringing the smoke down here, how it affects our air and our health, and what the future may hold. Dr. Sarap Erdahl has been following all of this. She's an associate professor of environmental and occupational health sciences at the University of Illinois Chicago School of Public Health. She has a PhD in that topic area from the University of Pittsburgh. Dr. Erdahl, welcome to the 21st Show. Also with us, Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for Illinois Public Media, the outlet that produces this program, and also a storm chaser and photographer. He joins us in studio in Urbana. Andrew, welcome back to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Dr. Craig Clements is professor and chair of the Meteorology and Climate Science Department at San Jose State University in California. He's also director of the Wildfire Interdisciplinary Research Center there. His PhD is in geophysics from the University of Houston. Dr. Clements, thank you for making the time to be with us.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can join us, 800-222-9455. How did that smoky weather affect you? And what did you notice first? Was it the sky, a smell, maybe how it felt to breathe? What questions do you have about staying safe should this happen again? 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Dr. Clements, big picture. Tell me more about what's been happening this wildfire season, especially in Canada.
Yeah, well, Canada's had an unprecedented fire season so far. Big forests, boreal forests, very dry, warm weather. It causes the fuels to dry out, and so ignition can occur more easily. And so you get higher intensity fires, which produce a lot of smoke. And that smoke just is transported wherever the winds go. So if the winds are blowing towards Chicago and Illinois, then that's where the smoke goes and settles. And so it doesn't always come from Chicago. Right now, there's big fires in Oregon. That smoke is moving across the western U.S. and it's starting to make its way into the Midwest as well. So smoke can transport very long distances, even across to Europe from North America.
Yeah, Andrew, let's pick up on that and talk about the sort of weather aspect of this. Say more than Dr. Clements did there about how, that smoke drifts down from Canada into the Midwest. We'll start with that one.
Absolutely. Well, it's as simple as it sounds there, that the smoke is going to go where the wind blows it. And so it all is kind of determined by the upper level jet stream pattern here as we come through the summer months. And so if you go back several weeks, we had these very intense fires burning in Ontario, you know, not very far away. And we also had generally northerly or northwesterly flow in the jet stream. So it was transporting that smoke directly into the Midwest, the Great Lakes, portions of the Northeast. So we had kind of that combination of very intense fires releasing a ton of smoke, and then the perfect jet stream wind profile to bring that smoke right into our area. Of course, it was thick in the sky and it was thick down near the ground. We saw some rain on some of those fires, now not extinguishing them completely or, you know, ending the fire weather season, but kind of reducing the amount of smoke those particular fires were producing. We also had a shift in the jet stream there, but as was mentioned, now we've got these very intense fires burning in portions of the Northwest United States and Oregon especially, and the flow of the jet stream continues to kind of migrate from the Northwest U.S. through the plains into the Great Lakes, and that's why we're again this week expected to be dealing with some smoke issues. Again, air quality issues, hazy skies, probably not as intense as it was several weeks ago, but it's just kind of moves around with the location of the most intense fires and the trajectory of the jet stream.
So we got a question from a listener, John in Urbana, sent a text asking or saying, we were headed to Chicago, watched the sky turn brown. At the time, the air quality index in Chicago was over 300, predicted to stay there for days. We masked up outdoors, almost canceled our trip. Thankfully, the wind shifted and the air cleared. Question, says John, what happened to the smoke from the Ontario fires? Looking at an air quality map, a huge area of unhealthy air seemed to disappear overnight. Does this happen because the smoke rises higher in the atmosphere? Andrew, I'll direct that to you.
You know, it's a combination, but the biggest element of it is usually just a change in the prevailing wind pattern there. And so I know exactly what's going on. I was actually vacationing in Wisconsin right before all of this. And so we had a ridge of high pressure kind of parked right over the Great Lakes that was deflecting the smoke off into the northeast. As that ridge kind of migrated south slowly, it allowed that smoke to settle down into parts of the Midwest, Wisconsin, Illinois, Chicago, as was just called out. It sat there for a couple of days. And then we had an area of low pressure come in. That brought a push of southerly winds, which directed that smoke out of the area. So almost like you can have a cold front come through on a warm fall day where it's 80 degrees outside. That front comes sweeping through and all of a sudden it's a cool and chilly evening. It's very much the same. You can have that thick smoke sitting overhead. Another, you know, storm system comes in. You kind of need to wait for something to blow that smoke away. And that's what that storm system did. It brought some rains. It also pushed that smoke away. Brought some rain, as I mentioned earlier, to the fires in Ontario. So it was a combination of getting some rain to kind of mitigate the amount of smoke that was being released and a change in the prevailing winds there that just pushed the smoke away, pushed it through the Northeast and off across the Atlantic, perhaps off into Europe, as was mentioned earlier on there. But it was kind of a combination there. But you really can see a reduction overnight sometimes.
All right, we need to take another break on the program, but first let me invite you to join us at 800-222-9455. Want to know how the smoky weather last week affected you? You know, what did you notice it? Did you feel it in your breathing? Did you just smell it? Could you see it in the sky? And what questions do you have about how to stay safe if this kind of thing happens again? 800-222-9455 is the number to join us. We're speaking about this with Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for our home station, WILL. Also, he's a storm chaser and photographer. We're also speaking with Craig Clements, who's a professor and chair of meteorology and climate science at San Jose State University and director of the Wildfire Interdisciplinary Research Center there. And after the break, we'll be joined by Dr. Sarap Erdal, who's been following all this, an associate professor of environmental and occupational health sciences at the University of Illinois Chicago's School of Public Health. And we're going to talk more about the health aspects of this after the break. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking about the smoke that was in the air last week. Our show was on summer break on repeat, so we're talking about it today and how that fits into recent weather history and what we could be in for in the future, maybe even in the coming days, as different sets of wildfire smoke is drifting toward our region. More from our texting group. Lloyd in Danville said, years ago, I burned branches and leaves. Smoke affected my wife's breathing, and I began to understand the impact air quality had on individuals suffering from respiratory illnesses. As an avid outdoors man, I now pay closer attention to long hours outside. My wife stays indoors now, which means that she can't go outside to travel to her 3-day-a-week part-time job. These issues affect her quality of life, and it saddens me that the conditions limit her movement. Also, Ricky in Urbana told us, I noticed the smell first. What I want to know is when our politicians are going to get serious about this climate disaster. It's not just coming, it's here. People are dying. We need to take the bull by the horns, Ricky says. We're talking about the wildfires and the smoke with Illinois Public Media meteorologist Andrew Pritchard, Craig Clements of the Wildfire Interdisciplinary Research Center at San Jose State University in California, and Sarap Erdal at the University of Illinois Chicago, specialist in the School of Public Health there. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. And Dr. Erdal, I want to bring you into the conversation now. Let's talk about the public health side of this. What is it that makes this sort of air, this sort of weather, harmful to our bodies?
Wildfire smoke, when we consider its chemical composition, it is a complex mixture consisting of various types of gases and fine particles produced from burning of wood and other organic materials. And because it is a complex mixture, that contains primarily fine particulate matter and also many different gases like carbon monoxide, nitrogen oxides, volatile organic compounds, polyaromatic hydrocarbons. These are both light and heavyweight molecular hydrocarbons. And with each one of these having its own health effects on humans, we have a complex health effects picture in front of us in terms of wildfire smoke inhalation related health risks. And in terms of the biggest threat from wildfire smoke inhalation is fine particles in ambient air. These microscopic particles in what we call the PM2.5 fraction, less than 2.5 particles, less than 2.5 micrometer in aerodynamic size, they can penetrate deep into our lungs. And these particles can get into our eyes and respiratory system. And also, I should point out that the risk is not just for outdoor exposure, but also indoor air exposure, because outdoor air infiltrates indoors. And so these inhalation exposures can cause health problems. And these health problems could be more minor in the form of coughing, difficulty in breathing, and it could be also heavier consequences with more severe respiratory and cardiovascular health effects. And this is particularly of concern for sensitive individuals like pregnant individuals, children, the elderly, workers who spend most of their time outdoors working, like, for example, construction workers, delivery people, and people who drive all day long because the outdoor air infiltrates into vehicles as well. And also anyone with existing respiratory and cardiovascular ailments. So these sensitive individuals are at higher risk, and this is why it's really important in these air pollution episodes that we've been experiencing, as you noted, from the summer of 23 to the episode that we experienced a week ago. Mm-hmm. It's really important to have public health messaging to ensure that the public and particularly sensitive individuals are taking measures to protect themselves. And your listener alluded to that. One of the ways to reduce health risk is to stay indoors, but also take measures while staying indoors to reduce exposures.
Well, let's come back to some of those measures. And I do want to pick up on that messaging point you made, though. And Andrew, let me ask you about this. Obviously, this danger is not sort of imminent, invisible in the way a tornado or lightning is. It's maybe not something you can feel as much as like heat indexes. I happen to know of a soccer camp for kids that, you know, cancels for lightning, canceled when there was that extreme heat yesterday, did not cancel when there was smoke. How do you communicate about this to people, about the dangers?
It's really tricky because it almost feels like an invisible risk, as you just said. It's not a big violent tornado or thunderstorm. You can't feel it on your skin. Like you can feel the heat and the humidity when we have these extreme heat warnings, as we did recently. And it's kind of a, you got to trust me on this. It's a long game. You can't breathe in, you know, this smoke. And even as someone who doesn't have asthma like myself, you know, I don't necessarily fall into those sensitive categories. And so I notice the aroma out there, but I'm kind of stubborn. And there is part of me that wants to get out there myself and, you know, tackle some yard chores or go for a long walk with the dog. And I have to remind myself, no, you just spent the morning warning everybody that the air is unhealthy outside. So there's not a really easy answer to it, you know, as we deal with this a little bit more frequently. I think that folks have generally responded pretty well. I heard a lot of sad stories about vacations paused or, you know, canceled, rescheduled, you know, days out at the water park or some sort of outdoor recreation. So it is, I understand, a bit of a bummer, to use a candid word there, but it's just, it is a very tricky weather risk to communicate. And I guess I don't pretend to have the exact answer, you know, or solution, but it is one of those that really is serious and can cause some extreme problems down the road, especially for those folks who are sensitive to it. And at the end of the day, you know, there is no healthy amount of these carcinogens and pollutants to be breathing in.
Dr. Clements, these wildfires, of course, are still going, as you mentioned. It seems like they will be for a while still. What does it take for a situation like this to really, you know, come to an end?
Well, so yeah, fire weather and extreme fire behavior is really a function of weather, day-to-day weather. So typically, if it's hot, dry, and windy, that is the kind of the recipe for bad fire days. And so really, for fires, you can get a containment. You know, the fire management agencies can really get a handle on a lot of these big fires, but they will continue to burn for a month or so or more. Some fires in California will burn for 2 months. They're not putting out a lot of smoke. They're not really, you know, burning at high intensity, but they're still active. And it's not until there's a major weather change or precipitation that comes along and puts everything out and changes the entire landscape or basically the weather conditions. So we could be in it for, you know, we're in the middle of like late July, early August. We're just getting into our fire season really in the western US. So we've got a few months to go.
Dr. Ardal, you mentioned this idea that, you know, smoke is not only a danger outdoors, it can infiltrate a home. What are some things people can do to sort of make themselves as safe as possible? I mean, should people be sitting around in their living rooms wearing masks, you know, watching TV at night, sort of thing, listening to the radio?
Yes, people can take a number of measures to protect themselves. One, they should go to EPA's Air Now website and check local air quality frequently so that they are informed of the air quality levels. More importantly, we established a 277-node air monitoring network in Chicago called Open Air Chicago that provides community level air quality data from air sensors that measure fine particulate matter, PM2.5, and nitrogen dioxide. And we established this network with two of my grants, along with funds from Chicago Department of Public Health. We collaborated with CDPH. And it is the largest air monitoring sensor-based air monitoring network in the nation and the second largest in the world after London. So Chicago residents, the first time in this summer, are able to look at the Open Air Chicago map website, identify the nearest sensor to their residence location and workplace location, and be informed about community level exposure information, which then empowers them with very specific local air quality data to take measures to protect themselves. And this is a more powerful system than EPA's Air Now website because EPA only operates four PM2.5 air monitoring stations within the Chicago city boundary. So that is one thing. The second is the residents, particularly sensitive individuals, should stay indoors. They should avoid outdoor activities and they should In their home, they should have a HEPA filter and to filter out those harmful fine particulate matter. They should go to the California Air Resources Board website, and California Air Resources Board certifies air purifiers, and they perform performance testing on them so that the residents can purchase, if they are in need of air purifiers that are that have HEPA filters but are also certified by the California Air Resources Board. They can use MERV 13 filters in their HVAC systems at home. If they are in both at home and in their vehicle, they can put the their ventilation in the recirculate mode so that they are not pulling outdoor air indoors, and they can close all the fresh air intake to prevent pulling smoky air from outdoors. As noted previously, I highly advise for citizens, residents to wear NIOSH certified N95 masks. This is important because cloth masks or surgical masks do not filter out smoke particles because they are in the ultra and nano size. And so these are some of the measures that they can take, but these measures are particularly important for children, the elderly, the pregnant individuals, outdoor workers, and anyone with existing respiratory and cardiovascular ailments.
Just about a minute left in our time, and Dr. Clements, I'm thinking about, in the Midwest here, we've long had to deal with tornado risk. We don't have to worry about hurricanes, and we generally haven't had to worry too much about wildfires. But it feels like we're all becoming more interconnected with the natural disaster threats we're experiencing. How do you think about that? How should people think about, long term, what this means?
Well, as the climate is warming and we are drying out our fuels, even grass fires in the Midwest are very dangerous. Grass fires spread very rapidly, and they are responsible for many firefighter fatalities. So it's not just big forest fires that are dangerous. It's all types of wildland fires. And so one thing that we can do is put more prescribed fire on the ground, which are managed fires, to reduce that risk, to reduce the fuel load, so we don't have out of control fires. And this is what's been implemented across the Western US. Very vast, large area, so it takes a lot of work to do that. But these are the kind of things that we need to do, is thinking about how in the future we're going to manage wildfire across not just the Western US or the Southeast, but across all of the US, because it's changing.
Craig Clements is with the Wildfire Interdisciplinary Research Center at San Jose State University in California. Saurabh Erdal is at the University of Illinois Chicago, and Andrew Pritchard is a meteorologist for Illinois Public Media. Thank you all so much for being with us. That is all the time we have for the 21st show today. We are a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.